She's back, and so are we.
And so are we. We survived the eclipse.
We survived the eclipse. We survived the earthquake. Welcome to the end times, ladies. We'll be your host, Say Valentinen, and this is Smell You Later. We're smelling our way into the apocalypse.
God, how bleak, podcasting the apocalypse.
Listen.
If anyone
what
was
else have we been
do
doing
it?
These last 3.5 years? Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. I missed the earthquake.
Wait. Oh, because you were in L.A.
I was in L.A. Oh, the funniest thing is, and I'm like, I'm going to have to cut this out because this really shows my ass. Like, it really shows how crazy I am. I am terrified of, quote unquote, the big one in L.A. And
oh, the San Andreas fault.
Yeah, I'm just like, leave me out of that. And I think about it all the time, more than I should. Someone who lives on the East Coast. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go to L.A. for 3.5 days. And then it's going to hit. The big one's going to hit. And then I'm going to get stranded. And then look what happens. I go to L.A. and there's an earthquake in New York City.
Wow.
Wow. God's timing is always right.
Yeah. I was in bed. It was like 10:20 in the morning. Yes, I was still in bed.
Leave her alone.
Because I stay in bed for an hour after I wake up, just like on my phone. But I was just sitting in my bed, reading my phone. And then suddenly something shakes. And I'm like, I wonder if the neighbors are doing something kooky upstairs. And then I was like, maybe a truck drove into the building. And then it was still shaking. And then I was like, oh no, it's another earthquake.
God.
Yeah, that was actually alarming because it was like 7 or 10 seconds. And I was like, this is a little too long to be.
Was it that long?
It was about like 5 to 7 seconds, but it feels long when you're like, what the fuck is that? And then you're like, okay, stop now, please. Yeah.
That's enough. It feels long when the earth is quaking.
Yeah. There was a moment where I was like, I live in a 6th floor walk-up, so I was just like, do I go downstairs or do I stay up here? What do I do?
God.
Oh, my Lord. But got me out of bed real quick, tell you that.
Yeah.
But I do remember we had an earthquake here in 2011, but it was a lot milder. But I do remember also it was like a random Tuesday afternoon, and I was like, did something just happen or did I just almost faint? Something just swayed.
Did I get vertigo?
Yeah. But this was alarming. And then now there's the eclipse, which is great because it happens on a Monday. So everyone who didn't want to go to work that day is like, cool. Let me take a break to stare at the sun and then say I can't come into work tomorrow because I'm on disability leave.
Stare directly at the sun.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I accidentally stared directly at the sun a couple times.
Who among us?
Yeah. Wait. Can you talk about what you're doing in LA?
Yeah, it's boring. It's just for a shoot. I had an all-day shoot on Thursday, so I flew in Wednesday morning, was cruising around LA, scouting every place on the planet, and then shot all day Thursday, worked from the office on Friday, and then flew back. It was pretty cut and dry.
Pretty
nothing.
Quick. Wait, so you had to scout location as well?
Yeah, mostly, like, we know where we were going, but we had to figure out how we were going to shoot them, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Creative director. You have to direct the creativity.
It's so funny because I lived in LA briefly when I was like 20 or 21. And I always thought that LA had a certain type of smell. It smelled like Disneyland. It smelled like the ocean. And it smelled like warm, sweet air. And it's been about 15 years since I was 21. And I've been back a small handful of times since. But I crash landed there on Wednesday. And I was like, damn, it still smells the same in a good way. It's, I guess the West Coast just does smell like this. It smells very idyllic. Mm. It was nice.
I haven't been to LA since like 2018 and then previously like 2013. So it's been more than 5 years. My time is back. I should visit every 5 years. I will visit LA.
Yes. And it's funny too, because you, newsflash, but you always talk about how every expensive hotel lobby has its own distinct, very that smell. The minute I walked in, I was like, and there it is.
Yep.
It was like almost a Santal 33 bomb. I'm sure it was something different or not, but I definitely had the hotel.
It's always
scent
something
experience.
Sandalwoody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know why someone just decided that sandalwood was like the smell that people want to pay $800 a night to be in. I don't know. But it's interesting because those smells, and I'm sure the people who engineer them think about this. I feel like hotels are always like so insane air conditioned year round for some reason. They're just like always blasting the AC. So it's like the smell of like the HVAC system plus whatever scent you're diffusing into the air is always...
They often come through the HVAC systems.
Yeah.
Which, if you stayed where I stayed, it certainly smelled like it did. I was like, okay, this smells nice, but it's almost too much. Like,
it's too much, dude. I think they could dial it down.
Yeah.
What are you trying to hide?
Exactly.
Yes. I haven't paid for a hotel in... I cannot remember the last time I paid for a hotel, just because I always do Airbnbs.
We're not going down that road. Okay. I would much rather just live the hotel life. Unless I'm in a house with you and all the EXO girls.
Yes. Yeah.
Then that was the only positive Airbnb experience I ever had.
Oh, you got so... I remember. I've always had pretty good Airbnb experiences, so...
One time I was opening the front door and the doorknob came off the handle in my hands.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I think I'm going to need this. Yeah. One time I tore the bed frame off the wall, which I don't really want to get into. But listen, we got to be screwing shit in.
Yeah.
Anyways.
You're Airbnb's like, I was testing anyway. For reinforcement and this was not safety grade.
It was not reinforced.
Kynan, what do you smell like today?
What do I smell? What the fuck do I smell like today? I'm wearing another repeat, but that's okay. This one was calling out to me from my perfume shelf for the past couple days, and I finally bowed to its will. I'm wearing Moon Dust by Arside.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's a little different than I remember, and not in a good or bad way. It's just more... I think I was so interested in the notes of this and all of the R-side scents when I first got to know them, because they all do have pretty cool builds, that I may have been preoccupied more by that than what I was actually experiencing. Maybe not, but because it hadn't been all that long. But this is just on my second go around with the fragrance or whatever. It's much more like effervescent and crispy in a nice way. At the top, there's cedarwood, grapefruit, jasmine. In the middle, there's peppermint and anise, which is, I think, what originally drew me to it. Mm-hmm. And then vetiver, juniper berries, and Palo Santo on the base. It's an odd one, but it's really nice. It's also a little bit more, I'm not going to say it's stereotypically masculine because we don't gender things on this show, but it's just a little, I don't know, drier in a sort of humidity way than a texture way, if that makes sense. It's nice. It's nice. It's really nice. It's a nice hot weather fantasy. It smells like a Vesper. I know you don't drink, but I drink enough for both of us. And it's just, it's giving like gin.
Ooh, I do love when fragrances interpret boozy notes, but in a lighter way, like gin or, what was the Killian one? Roses on Ice?
Yes.
Was it Saint Germain?
Yeah. It was definitely a... Yeah, no,
spritzy
exactly.
Alcohol, that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I like that. I feel like when people say like a boozy scent, they're always talking about whiskey.
Or rum. We got to give it up with the rum scents. I can't enough. Yeah.
There's never just a little bit of rum. It's just rum.
That's really true, actually.
It's the whole damn fragrance. And I'm like, what if there was just a little bit?
I feel like whiskey or bourbon, it's just an additive. But with rum, it's just the whole thing. Like Jazz Club.
Yeah.
Which I have come to like because I think people have just beat me into submission about it. But everyone's wearing Jazz Club. And I get it. It's really lovely. But that thing is all rum.
That's funny. I don't think I ever really smell people wearing Jazz Club. But I do... clock people wearing By the Fireplace.
That's because you can't avoid it. I'll smell that three blocks away and I'll love it.
But... sometimes I get them confused, but they're very different.
But I see your confusion.
They live in the same world. I don't know.
Yeah. They're sisters, not twins.
They're sisters.
Sable, what do you smell like today?
Oh boy. I smell like another eBay find.
Oh God.
El de Lolita by Lolita Lempicka. It's the one... it's like the Pirates of the Caribbean themed one that looks like a mermaid.
Okay. Is that what it looks like?
There's like little...
I see. Like, okay.
It's a really interesting bottle design. There's like this like plastic net that's like a bib around the neck. Uh-huh. It's like a horizontal heart shape. There's like a rhinestone L dangling.
Yeah.
It's very early 2000s, which is...
it's doing a lot.
Yeah, I think this did come out originally, I think, in the early 2000s or the mid-early 2000s, and it was discontinued in 2017. I think this bottle is from 2009. Yeah. I'm writing a story for Airmail about Lolita Lempicka, so I'm just like doing all this research on the brand. There are dedicated forums to people who are obsessed with the particular era and distributor of Lolita Lempicka. It's crazy.
Really?
They're like, we really like this version when it was bought by this company, but we don't like this version. I was like, wow, you guys... but I think this came out. I remember when it came out because I saw like all the ads. It was very mermaid themed.
Okay.
I didn't get, I don't know why, I don't know. I just didn't get it at the time. I wasn't as like fragrance savvy, and also I was poor, but
yeah.
It's such an unexpected scent because when I see this bottle, I would think like tropical, coconut, aquatic, floral. And it's just like this, it's like a warm, powdery, spicy vanilla, but with this quirky, bitter orange.
Ooh.
Note. Yeah, it's really weird. And I can't tell if it's weird because it's just old. It's just an old bottle that's been like sitting in somebody's closet.
Yeah.
They said the bottle was from 2009. So obviously, yes, it is old, but it's just a very, I don't think I've smelled anything like this that I can remember. It's billed as like on Fragrantica as like the main accords being like vanilla, warm, spicy, cinnamon, citrus, sweet, powdery, woody, herbal. Heavy on the spicy and powdery, like the cinnamon, I definitely clock that. Yes, the vanilla. And then the citrus of it is just like the really oddball note that kind of makes it a curveball.
Okay.
But overall, to me, it's just very vanilla. It's like a warm, spicy vanilla with a powdery base or something.
Part of me thinks, I don't know that I'd like the spiciness mixed with the powdery, but I can see a world in which that definitely works. Okay.
It's very weird. And again, I really wonder what this smelled like when it was new compared to now. But it's funny because when I sprayed it immediately on, I was like, bleh, I don't know about this. And then as it dried down, I was like, oh, okay, now it's getting good. I think the bitter orange top note was like a little bit too screechy from the get.
Okay.
I feel like early aughts perfumes have this quality to them that's so of the era, and it's so hard to explain. But to me, it almost feels like this synthetic blast of, I don't know, something like ozonic, like a chemical ozonic quality to them that I can clock. And maybe that was just the fragrance trends at the time or the formulations. I have no idea. But this had that. And I was like, whoa, this is definitely like in a time capsule.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
It's like a time capsule of an era of fragrance, which is interesting.
What color is the bottle? I can't make it out.
It's a blue, but the juice turned brown, as they sometimes do over the years. Okay. And that just depends on the ingredients. It doesn't mean it's gone off.
Oh, so it was blue, and why it's,
I don't know if it was,
sense.
The bottle is blue. You can, I don't know if you can see it, but like,
I can see it. We're on Zoom tonight, if you couldn't tell. Yeah. I hope you can fucking hear me.
But the juice inside has turned brown, so it just looks like this weird greenish color overall. But I forget, I think somebody from Firmenich was telling me that, I think, was it Jimmy Choo or was it, I don't know, there was some big label fragrance that they were working with that because there was an overdose of vanilla, the juice over time, it would just turn brown. I don't know why. And everyone would complain because they would think that it like went bad. So they're just like, no, it's supposed to be like that. But instead what they did is they just switched out the bottle to be opaque.
Oh, funny.
I was like, oh, that solves the problem.
They're like, shut up.
Yeah.
If you didn't tell me, that bottle to me looks really vintage.
Kind
super
of.
Opulent, super old. Just it's decorated and ornate. They don't make them like this anymore.
They really don't. The Lolita Olympica bottles, I will say, went off. They got the custom molds. They got all these little doodads.
Yeah,
they got dangly bits. The
thing
bottles
is wearing
that
more jewelry than I am.
Yeah.
Shit.
I figured even if I don't love the scent, it'll just look pretty as a collectible. So,
which is really what we're all here for.
I've been wearing it and it does feel weird because I'm like, I smell like a teenager.
I love that.
So this episode's guest is someone I feel like we've been talking about getting them on the pod for a year more.
For a lifetime. And I just don't feel like we're worthy.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Well, I know we've talked to everyone.
Like, they wouldn't want to do this. What are we going to even ask them? Arabel Sicardi, if you're not familiar with them.
The god.
Prolific writer. Also prolific beauty writer. One of my favorite voices in beauty. One of the true heads, as they say. I feel like what I love about beauty writing or just like beauty culture in general is the people involved, the connections with people, how things are made, where things come from. Arabel has always been just so informed about all that stuff. And they do so much research and they care so much about the way they engage with beauty, the way the world engages with beauty and not many people think about it that way. And I wish I could think about it that way if I wasn't lazy and didn't have undiagnosed ADHD, but I'm just constantly in awe of everything they write. They wrote this amazing, they have a Substack called You've Got Lipstick on Your Chin. You should subscribe to it because it's really good. I'm not just saying that because I know them and they're a friend, but it's like legitimately very good.
Yeah.
They had a post about how dupe culture is killing the beauty industry, focusing on fragrance, because I think, I feel like dupe culture in fragrance particularly is like much more insidious than makeup or skincare.
I just feel like it's talked about in a way that is much more forward. Because I guess we talk about, you know, scents invisible, so you don't really have much to go off, but the way it smells, hello.
Yeah.
I feel like the first place you go to is dupes. And as a makeup wearer, I'm always super interested in whether or not it should be. Like a dupe of a shade, if it is like of lipstick or blush, if it's discontinued, like dupes like that. But that shit you have to like really dig for. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's like dupe culture and fragrance is very top of the funnel, if you will.
Perfumes are olfactive pieces of art and you're just ripping off somebody's art.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem cool.
Right. What I've always loved about Arabelle, and there are very few writers that I look up to only because I feel like I've always just had blinders on. And when we started writing in beauty, it wasn't, it sounds so fucking old, but not to sound like an old hag, it just wasn't what it is today. You know what I mean? No. There weren't that many people to look up to, and we all had more room to do our own thing. But, you know, I think today about how a lot of media in general, just by way of people trying to keep their jobs and publications trying to stay open, like it's all branded content, whether it is or not, because of newness and SEO. And I get it. It's not good or bad. It just is. It's where we are. Fine. But what Arabelle's always done, even when beauty did look quite a bit differently, is just approach things from this, calling it fearless sounds trite, but just this no gods, no masters, but not in a from a cynical perspective, just a truly inquisitive perspective in a way that really showed me what was possible. Like I never tried to emulate them, but I think they were always my North Star in terms of, oh, you really can do this yourself. There, there are other ways to do it along with you and along with Kara, but Arabelle is really been the one that I've always just low-key, high-key worshipped. And having them, I was just afraid to ask them to be on the show. Of course, I wanted it, but I'm like, I can't fuck this up.
I have the worst thing they can say is no mentality.
Yeah.
That works for me 90% of the time. And thankfully, they're a friend. So
yeah,
it's not totally out of left field.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm so stoked to have them on the pod. They're so brilliant. And I hope that they make you think about beauty and fragrance in a way that goes, huh, didn't think about it like that.
They do have a book coming out.
Yes. The House of Beauty. I think it's been in the works for a while. I think they just filed the final draft.
It's close, but I don't think we have a date yet. But when we do, pre-order and buy it and leave it a positive review and 5 stars.
Yes, please do.
Yes.
Anyway,
you can do that for us too, if you feel so obliged.
We've yapped on enough.
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. My name is Arabelle Sicardi. I write the newsletter, You've Got Lipstick on Your Chin. I'm definitely taking recommendations for a better name, by the way. And it's so nice to meet you all. I've been writing on the internet for far too long, but I am enjoying my time being sentient. And right now I'm wearing actually two fragrances. I'm wearing Commodities Gold.
Ooh.
And I'm wearing a rollerball that I got on my trip to Morocco last year with my partner. And it's just this boutique's home signature scent. And it's, I can't read the label. So I have to gatekeep because I unfortunately know nothing about it except it smells nice. But it does have some lavender in it. Mostly I got it because everyone there smelled incredible and was very good looking. And that's all that I needed to be like,
I can imagine. Yeah. Also, Commodity Gold is so good.
Yeah. It's so delicious. Yeah. It's just yummy and it's not cloying. I haven't worn a lot of my library since the pandemic began because it's just, I get a fragrance headache so quickly.
Mm.
Oh, do
from
you?
It. I do, which is difficult when you're like judging fragrances, obviously. But yeah, it's one of the few regular fragrances in my rotation that I'm like, this is ye old faithful. Mm-hmm. I can layer this, I can wear it singularly. And it plays well.
It does.
In a pack.
Yes, it definitely does. I feel like I tend to wear the gold minus scent I don't know what, I forget what they call it. They're like scent
personal,
space.
Right?
Yeah, personal. That's right. That's right. Yeah, the gold personal. I don't know. I think they just put ISOE super in it.
It's funny that we're, it's funny you say that, Arabelle, because I, the past weekend, broke out my commodity milk personal, which is one of my all-timers. I thought I was going to hate it, but Sable turned me onto it. And I was wearing it heavy when I met my partner 2 years ago, or a little over. And I don't know, spraying that on, I didn't say anything. And he smelled me over the weekend. He was like, "What are you wearing?" And I was like, "I got you."
Triggering. Oh my God. How many perfumes do you think you own, Arabelle?
I've never counted. I gave away a lot, and some of them were lost or damaged when I moved here from New York because I had a horrible moving team and they didn't pack any of my beauty products properly. So one of the boxes came in and it was like
half
torn open, and like a Gucci Bloom bottle was just hanging by its life from the corner. Oh. It's like, no, I've lost some in war, but I have like different shelves in different rooms of my house, and each one maybe has 10 or 15. So I'd say maybe I have a little less than 100 full size bottles.
Okay.
And then I have drawers and drawers, like Muji size drawers, like small jars full of perfume samples. Mm-hmm. And I will never count that because the perfume samples simply don't count.
No, they don't count. It's like you have counting pennies.
Yeah, you have to commit it to the bid, so they're just there.
Yeah.
I feel like there's this whole subsect of people, thanks to, I don't know, Fragrantica and social media, and I suppose just the way that we are trying and engaging with perfume now, that their whole fragrance journey is all done through samples, like whether they're ordering them or ordering like decants or discovery sets or whatever. I mean, and I say this with so much love, I try to stay away from like perfume social media just because I think it's just too much racket with all the shit I'm already doing. Mm-hmm. But I see a lot of a lot of people just interacting with fragrance through the teeny tiny scent vials. And I think that's foreign to me, but also I'm like, how liberating in a way to have that ephemeral experience with scent, that with a vial only lasting a week or two. I don't know. It's just, it's different than how I have always thought about it.
I think we're spoiled too, because we just get sent so many fragrances, like full sizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys have great bragging rights in your mail. Like, you've established a great direct line from the universe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get as many fragrance PR packages as I used to, probably because I have a big mouth on my newsletter about many things. But that's also totally fine with me, because I don't think most people outside of beauty media like really understand the amount of waste that we've encountered while working more full time in these spaces. Mm-hmm. At my parents' place, they probably still have beauty stuff that I got as an intern at Teen Vogue. Mm-hmm. Like, you just get sent so much stuff, like every single day.
Yeah.
You would get thousands and thousands of dollars of product to the point where you would just give it away to strangers, right? Yeah. And I still give things away regularly to strangers. So I don't know. It's now I am so much more committed to just the act of one-on-one curiosity and style as it relates to both fashion and as it relates to scent. Like, I really don't care about trends. I don't really care about influencer culture. I care more about what haunts people and like what makes you want to tell a story. And if it brings up an emotional moment for you, and it could be a fragrance, it could be a piece of clothing. Like, I care more about that one-on-one exchange rather than like, and now I'm partnering with TK, right. TK, TK for TK, TK month. So
yeah, I guess I'm curious, because you have always been like my favorite beauty writer, or just writer period, and have been following you like my whole career. But I am wondering, it's such an open-ended question, especially when you've been in the game as long as any of us, especially you have, but how did you...
I need to have you to do a voice note of just pep talks for me after this interview. Okay, but continue.
Done. You have me on speed dial. It's fine. But tell us about your fragrance journey, like your, I don't know, how everyone approach it, your first memory of fragrance, how you got into fragrance, or how fragrance maybe did or did not pull you into the industry, because I know that we all have different ways of how we got here, but I'm super interested in yours.
Such delicious questions. Okay. My fragrance journey, there's two beginnings. There's the gay beginning, and then there's the professional hater beginning, right? And those two identities really just solidify my adolescence. Like, that's a summary. But so the first memory of a really intimate relationship to scent that I was like, I want to know more about this. I want to feel like this all the time. I want to talk more to people about this, was my first college girlfriend. And she always smelled incredible, plus leather jacket. And I don't remember what fragrance she like wore at this point. I've repressed it for my own survival. But we would go around Manhattan when we were like in between classes, in between fashion events. We would go around and just smell everything. We would smell Chinatown and the dumpling places that are closed now. We would smell the subways. We would smell the vintage clothing in the thrift stores as we would try things on. It's just, it was such a sensory experience and such a full experience of falling in love that I was like, oh yeah, I'm probably going to never see this person ever again. Like, this is not the person for me, but there are moments in this that I will carry and understand better as I grow. And the smell of hugging someone that you really like and that you want to kiss, but you're afraid of that particular, like just you smelling them and then you make a decision on when to kiss them or not. I was like, I want to bottle this. I want to know this smell forever. Yeah. And I want to be able to write that. So that gay experience was like, yeah, I love smell. And then the second time is more of a writer thing where the universe like drops an incredible story in your lap and you can't leave it. Anywhere you go, a new version, like a new thing that you have to add to the story just presents itself. Mm-hmm. And it was my professional hateration of Chanel. Coco Chanel.
I love that. I love that writing from you.
I do too.
Thank you. And my obsession with Chanel and Chanel number 5 mm-hmm. is so deep and so expansive that I literally spent 2 years just researching Chanel. And that became the first chapter I wrote for my book. And that was the chapter that the House of Beauty sold on. And I can't wait for the pre-orders to be available. And
I
for,
can't
like,
fucking wait.
I know. You both are getting copies.
Hell yeah.
You're going to get things. I was writing that chapter for the Fragrance Heads. I was writing to you guys. But it was so wonderful to just devote my time. And honestly, they are some of the coolest years of my life. Was just like traveling around the world, researching something I so deeply cared about and still care about and believe in and I'm curious by, and it shaped my early adulthood, was just like, this is a beautiful thing that I see everywhere in the world. I don't have to relate to any of the women or the people that use this fragrance, but we all are drawn to the story and to the smell. And that means that the idea is speaking to us somehow. So why is the story incomplete? And I had so many questions about Chanel as a person and the history of that fragrance. And the more I learned about it, the more questions I had. And it was such a glamorous, fucked up story. And it took me to Berlin. It took me to London. It took me to Paris. It took me to Italy. I was chasing her ghost all around the world. And I met incredible people who delighted me, seduced me, broke my heart, taught me so many weird things that I like, it hurt almost to end that chapter and like it to let go of that writing. And I wrote that chapter first. And I was like, is the whole book going to be like this? It's too much. And by now, I wrote that first draft of that particular chapter almost 10 years ago now. And so by the time it comes out, it'll feel new to everybody else. But I wrote that when I was like fresh out of college. And I knew even then, which was such a weird experience to know, that a lot of writers never get to tell such a weirdly fantastical story of true facts that actually happened. And it's weird to know that you've written one of the best things you'll ever write really early. But and so it didn't help when I was in revisions and when I was finishing the rest of the book to be like, how can I measure up to?
Yeah.
But then you have to let that go, because it's like, I'm going to write so many other books. Hopefully I'm going to write so many other stories and do so many other projects.
Yeah, of course.
This, that particular chapter and my obsession with Chanel, it was a gift to myself that let me really test the limits of my own skills, my own curiosity, my own capacity to hold some of the tension and to condense decades of facts and information and grief and epiphanies in a couple pages. But it was so fun. I love writing.
Do you think that chapter is very different now than when it, what it was when you originally drafted it?
I didn't change a lot over the course of many revisions. I am ruthless. I love a good edit. I love revision. If I see a flood of red, I'm like, oh my God, thank you. You're saving me. But that chapter, it came out pretty much fully formed. And I know that because sometimes I just go back to the first drafts of all of these chapters and all of my writing. And I'm like, just curious about how we can change our minds and how we can get closer to what we really mean. I really think that revision and editing is such an act of love and care and commitment that a lot of people will never get to see, but a lot of writers aren't afforded the opportunity to experience, to be able to just spend a lot of time with something, not worrying necessarily about a deadline, but just their own journey getting to something. But that chapter, no, I didn't have to do much. I tightened up the pacing. I wrote it like a movie. I understood the pacing that I wanted. I understood the music I was hearing in my head. And so I just had to follow it. And for the other chapters, they're all quite different. But that one, I was like, oh, I know what I need to do here. And I've watched enough spy movies to be able to do this right.
I'm so intrigued.
I feel like that could be a book in itself. What you said and how far you went to the ends of the earth to write this chapter.
It was so fun. Oh my God, you guys. I got a lap dance next to Napoleon's tomb. It was great. 5 stars. Glamour.
Wow.
Yeah. Damn. So that's one chapter. I can't wait for you guys to read all of it.
I've always followed your BE writing. I know you did. You also started it with your fashion blog. And I read you on Rookie as well. But then once you got into BD, I feel, and this could just be like a weird little brain catalog thing of mine, that for some, whatever reason, I was like, Arabelle's thing is fragrance. Arabelle really likes fragrance and really likes writing about fragrance. It just stuck in my, maybe just because not many people, A, do write about fragrance in BD editorial. And when they do, it's like a commerce blurb. It's not actually that much. It's not very, I don't want to say thought out because it sounds mean, but it's like the commercial copy. Yeah. But I was like, oh, here's a person who actually thinks about fragrance. So I'm curious, what is it about perfume that like drew you in or like that just keeps you intrigued?
That's a great question. Let's see. How do I answer it succinctly? I would say that fragrance fascinates me more than a lot of other aspects of beauty because it transcends struggles of access in terms of class. Because for the most part, everyone has a sense of smell and you can experience and enjoy smell regardless of what perfume you may have. You can just walk around the neighborhood and learn and love a place just by noticing it a little bit better through your nose. I love getting fresh flowers, right? And I like seeing them desiccate and I like being able to dry them and like, just the whole lifespan of flowers, its own flower story. And every fragrance lover and every perfumer in the world has their own story to tell about flowers or a bouquet or a garden they love. Like, I have smelled so many different versions of gardens in the world. And I love each and every single one because I'm like, they're all so different. You can smell the same place at different times and different weather, and it smells different. And you understand that instinctively. It's just you may not notice it or be able to articulate it. But once you start paying attention to the world and just like smell and how it interacts with you, you learn so much about your place in it. And mm-hmm. that is something that you don't need to go to Sephora to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that I can talk about fragrance or compliment a stranger about fragrance. And it doesn't need to be an influencer moment. It's not a moment of transaction. It's a moment of connection.
Yeah.
And that is what brings me back to it every time. And the people that really love fragrance that I know of, they may not know of beauty editorial at all, but they all have a personal connection to smell. You ask any random person who smells nice on the street what fragrance they're wearing, you can immediately have such a cute conversation.
Yeah.
Or they might tell you about, oh, my mom got it, or this is actually my like sister's fragrance that I like stole. Like, it's great. It's just those moments of immediate connection are what make me love beauty. And I just happen to write about a bunch of other things about beauty, but I'm always just looking for what makes us feel more human mm-hmm. and how do we love each other better?
Yes. Hell yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. I feel like perfume is the last frontier of beauty that can't be AI'd or yassified, and you have to experience in person. So if you're smelling someone, it's because you are having or you have the potential to have a moment.
Yeah. I mean, there are a bunch of different like AI and like by
they're trying
fragrance cultures. Yeah. Like, I think there was an event literally today that I like bought tickets for that I didn't even put on my calendar, therefore did not exist. That was just like presentations of different like science related fragrance projects. Like, there are AI fragrance things that are happening, and
yeah,
people have been trying to do smell-o-vision for yeah. thousands of years, it feels like. Mm-hmm. And there's like all of these things that are trying to create a digital code binary language of smell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so fascinated with them as well, mostly because I love when they fail, and not as like a smug, like, ha ha ha. Like, there's a little bit of that, but there's more. I think that when we see how they fail, we see what can't be replaced, and yes. then we can cherish it a little better.
Totally. And yeah.
fragrance is the type of thing where the mistakes make the greatest pleasure sometimes. Mm-hmm. I remember when I read, what was it, The Secret of Scent? Yeah, it was probably The Secret of Scent many years ago. And there's this part in it where like Chandler's talking about how musk was discovered and like how like TNT is so close molecularly to a fragrance molecule that it was like almost, I think it was like almost accidentally discovered. And oh. like when you break down smell, you break it down into these letters that make up the universe, right? So it you can have typos. You have typos in smell. And if you misplace something, something else happens entirely. It's not just you don't just misspell a word. Yeah. You ultimately accidentally create an entirely new thing.
Yeah.
And that is so cool to me. And I remember when I read that, I was waiting for the train back home. I was so moved and enthralled by the idea of a happy, explosive accident in fragrance that I like had to tell the woman next to me that was also waiting for the train. I was like, not to be creepy, but I just read this. I'm like, I need to tell somebody. And I read it to her. And then we both got on. And she was like, that is so cool and so random. Thank you for sharing.
And I was like, I love
thank
that.
You for, thank you for not thinking I'm weird.
Yeah. I love that. And you were a fragrance judge for Ardnall Faction's awards this past year. Like, how did that come about? And how do you judge a scent?
I think you'd have a great time. But I was invited to be a judge for the IOA's awards a couple years ago. I think it was maybe 27 for the Sada Kitchy category, which is the experimental category. So it's like all of the weirdest artsy experimental
oh, cool.
selections. And that was so fun. I remember judging those award entries when I was at a writing residency, and I had such a wonderful time writing down my feedback and my scores in between writing and revision. And yeah, but I was asked by Saskia, the founder, who's read my work for mm-hmm. a long time, and Minetta, who also helps run the organization. Minetta is so cool, so knowledgeable, and from what I understand, is a longtime reader of mine as well. She actually got fragrance through me. Whoa. And I was just like, oh my God, it's like the circle of life. We're all working together
so
now.
Cool.
I think it's so fun. Minetta teaches classes at Institute for Art Nouveau Faction's in-person space in LA's Chinatown on a pretty regular basis. So whenever I get like really bummed out that I'm like writing into a void or maybe becoming more and more irrelevant, it's like I just think about the fact that I know at least one other person who has been affected and has fallen in love with beauty through something that I did and loved it so much that it became their calling and that mm-hmm. they now teach other people. There's a very clear physical example of a person I actually know, and that keeps me from spiraling sometimes.
That's so cool.
So yeah, I loved being able to do those things in 2017, and then I got asked to do it again this time, and this time I got to judge, I think, the artisan, like the main category, mm-hmm. I believe. And I was doing most of the judging at the Institute this year in person, which was so nice because before it was a quite solitary experience. I was just in my like writing room and I probably smelled like 50 different fragrances at once. They probably needed to like deep clean the carpet in there, but it was really fun. It's beautiful. And you both like this. At the award ceremony for the 2017 one, I believe, it was in Amsterdam. But before they announced the awards, they would perfume out clouds of the winner before they said who it was. So the winner would find out first before anyone else. Wow. And I thought that was the most romantic thing. I loved that. Because you could tell as soon as they realized. Before anyone else. That's so funny. Yes.
But I'm sure the people who didn't win, they were like, oh, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if they're going to do it again this year, but we'll see. It's going to be in Lisbon.
That's so cool.
We know that your studies of perfume and just beauty in general have taken you all around the world. And I know this is like a large question, but what are some of the coolest things that you've learned when you've been chasing all these things around the globe?
What a good question. There's like many different things that I've been taught, but the thing that I carry with me that gets bigger every day in my head is that the stories don't matter. The people do. Used to go into the stories or the writing wanting simple answers, or I wanted to be proven right about a hunch. Mm-hmm. And the longer that I stay with something, the more I realize the simple answer is a shortcut and it's not as satisfying and it's not truthful. Mm-hmm. And I will probably never have an easy answer for big questions, and that's okay. And what I want to get out of being a creative and a person in the world is that people are the most valuable thing in the universe to me, like the actual human beings in the stories that I'm learning about or reporting on or writing about. They're the ones that create things. They're the perfumers. They're the designers. They're the textile workers. They're the manicurists. They're the artists. And they leave behind evidence of who they are in the work that they do and the ways that they create beauty in the world. And most people only ever understand beauty through these material things and this evidence that they consider theirs because they bought it. But for me, it's not really enough to have the evidence. I want to know about how it was made. I want to know about the person that created something, that it created it from their own instincts, from their own talent, from the legacies that they were given and how they learned how to do something. And everyone has a lot of story to tell around the world. It's just a matter of finding a way to make it a trustworthy and honorable experience for them to tell you. And I've learned I have to be more patient that I might not get the easy answers. I may not get any answers at all. And that's okay. No one's ever entitled to the full story. And I love that. I love being able to say no. I love being surprised. I love being refused and taught something different. And it's made me grow as a person. I went in for the book, and pretty much my entire writing experience, I've always been known for this phrase, beauty is terror, right? Like, that's how a lot of people understand me, that they can summarize my motto, beauty is terror, beauty is power. And that's what I sold the book on, is like this framework of presenting the industry in a specific way of its violent repercussions. That's still true. I still believe that it can be a violent thing. But in the process of telling that story and growing up in that world, I also learned that care is the antidote to violence, and that beauty is only meaningful if it involves people that you want to be in community with are there celebrating it with you. I really want to commit more to creating a community that can talk about beauty and it not be a transactional experience. We're not pressured to buy products. It's just, there's so many different ways to talk about beauty, and there's so many different stories of beauty to tell. Sometimes it's really fucked up. Sometimes it's exhausting. Sometimes we just want to go out without makeup on and not feel like a failure or lazy for it.
Yeah,
I get that. I get that. And on the other hand, I'm like, the more I learn about beauty, even the fucked up parts, the more I'm like, oh, I love this. I love it. I could hear people talk about how they got into their industries, if they're a manicurist or a hairstylist, all day. And I really cherish the fact that as a writer, I can just listen to how people became artists all the time. I think it's one of the greatest pleasures in the world.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. I feel like inclusivity is one of the big keywords in beauty culture now, but it mostly just means inclusivity in terms of who can buy into beauty, but it doesn't include the literal inclusivity of creating a community and of caring for each other. And that is where beauty can be restorative, but instead the culture just moves more towards, I don't know, how we can all share tips to like self-optimize. I think is great for people. Again, we're so beauty pilled because we're in the industry and we have so much access. So it's, we've already had a head start on this, but then, so I can totally see the appeal of buying into it that way. But at the same time, we're like, wait, this isn't actually making anyone feel better.
Yeah. It's really a choose your own adventure. And for me, I'm like, I'm so in it. I'm so in it. I want every cheat code. I want to be the God's eye view. I want to be able to like, make my little beauty world Sims like millionaires and have 18 jobs. And there's so much fun and there's so much pleasure and surprise and intricacy and weird tips and hacks, if you will, just experiencing beauty. And it leads you to so many cool people that I'm like, even if I absolutely do feel the pressures of one, getting older, two, becoming less and less relevant to like the media's eyeballs as, oh, I'm not the target audience anymore in culture. And I was raised as a target audience. I was an early influencer. What does it mean now?
Yeah.
I feel that. I feel growing up. But at the same time, there's so much cool stuff to learn. And I know more now than I did before. And I would not give that up. I'm in beauty school now. I get to talk to different makeup technicians and beauty workers all the time. And I'm learning so much, so much. I'm continuously humbled and it's great.
And so I remember you posting about going to beauty school. Like, what made you want to explore beauty from that angle?
Great question. There's a couple different reasons. One, I'm working on a beauty nonprofit called the Museum of Nails Foundation. And I'm aiming to launch it so people can start donating to it and contributing to it by the end of the year. Right now, I'm building up my board. So if anyone listening to this wants to be part of it in some way, you should totally hit me up because I definitely would love the help. But I've been working on it for more than a year and a half right now, and obviously spent many years just interviewing and building up community within the nail industry for it. And that was because I spent so many years doing research within the larger beauty industry. As part of my book, I created this three-dimensional God's eye view mind map of the entire industry in terms of community organization. I was like, I didn't want to contextualize beauty as an industry of just like pure products you can buy. I was like, there are so many different organizations that are beauty centered or use beauty as a tool, as a method to care for other people. There's people that offer mutual aid with haircuts, or like they offer sliding scale, or they offer like makeovers to chronically ill people, or they create care packages for domestic, like survivors of domestic violence. There's so many different ways that we take care of each other using beauty. And I felt a compulsion to really map that out on an international scale. So I did that because that was just what I needed to do for my book, so I could create the right framework for myself. But then I kept on adding to it. And then I noticed that there was so much culture, at least just within the fragrance world. There's so many cool fragrance communities in the world.
Yeah.
But there's not the same amount. There's not really a lot of similar organizations for nail art and for nail culture, and certainly not for nail artists. So I decided to begin building something for nail artists and for nail salon workers specifically, because nail salon workers are usually women of color who are first generation, and they suffer some of the highest rates of wage theft in the country. And they're just chronically under-resourced. Mm-hmm. And as someone that reports on the industry and is also an Asian American, and most of these women are Asian American, I was like, I want to do something that's more important than just my writing and people who have given me so much beauty and pleasure in the world. But I don't want to do that as like a person parachuting in. If I'm going to do this, I really want to understand what the needs are as a technician myself. I signed up for beauty school and I'm learning everything from the ground up. And it's really, it's honestly, it's so much science. It's so much science. I know chemistry, I really don't want to know. So yeah, that's why I'm in beauty school. I want to learn more about how working beauty technicians, like how they experience education in the beauty world right now. I want to be able to understand the dead spaces and the ways it can be improved. And I want to be able to say, when I'm approaching nail artists on behalf of the organization, that I'm also a nail tech. I want to be able to be in community and not just a reporter within the space. And that just felt really important and instinctual for me to do. Yes, it's more work, but this is such pleasure to me that it doesn't feel like a burden. It's something that will make me better at what I want to do. And yeah, I have other projects down the line that will probably be released before then, but that is why I'm in beauty school.
That is dedication.
That really is.
Yeah.
Like your whole chest.
Yeah. I'm really into committing to the bit, as you may have noticed. I'll go anywhere. I'll try anything, if anything, for the story.
Damn.
I mean, it and it shows.
Yeah.
I have a question that we didn't brief you with, but we've touched on this in numerous ways. I've heard you say throughout our conversation how some parts of beauty are obviously very transactional, and there is so much consumption in the industry right now, but there's also beauty is also a communal act, and it's an act of care. And I feel like the three of us all are around the similar age, and we have been writing for forever, and we saw the genesis of social media and then YouTube beauty culture, which pushed its way into influencers, and now whatever the hell is happening on TikTok. I try to look at things just from a neutral. I know I sound like a fucking hater myself a lot of the time, but I try to just look at things from a neutral perspective, because like, who does hating on an influencer help? But I wonder, what, Arabelle, what changes have you seen in the ways that people discover and enjoy and interact with beauty in general. And maybe just we can keep it to fragrance, but not for better or worse, but I see a lot of TikTok driving beauty in the same maybe five or six scents or same buzzwords. And to me, it's not a good or bad thing. It just is what it is. But I feel like we're more than I've ever seen before. We're all now interested in fragrance and talking about fragrance. But it's, I feel like with the expansion of this idea and enjoyment of fragrance, the social media has given us just a couple lanes in which to enjoy it. And I'm just wondering, in your career and throughout your lifetime, what do you think, influencer and social media, how has it changed the way that we are taught to engage with beauty? If that made any sense, I'm sorry. I felt my brain expanding.
It totally does. It's such a good question that opens big doors. Okay. So it has, the ways that we interact with fragrance over the, let's say, the past decade of internet, it has changed because of the different media networks and systems that now exist. You're right. TikTok is such a huge driver of fragrance now. You have fragrance influencers, and they existed in different forms. They still exist on YouTube, on Fragrantica. Every single version of web has its own fragrance culture. It existed before the internet. It will exist after the internet. But each one is a different, unique flavor. And it feels like the fast fashion aspect of the internet and how paced, how quick it is now, it does create this pressure on consumption and fragrance, and it's made it more dupe culture oriented than it was in the past, which is really unfortunate to me, in my opinion, because while people know of more fragrances now, they don't really know about the cost of the fragrances or the labor behind it. They just see a thing that's expensive. They're like, it's just smelly water. Why the fuck is it $400?
Yeah.
And I'm like, listen, I don't think that it needs to be $400 either. I'm not going to say that any price point is a justifiable one. But as someone that's reported on it and that has built fragrances from scratch and has seen things as they develop, it's not like they're just getting food coloring and putting it in a bottle. Fragrance is not snake oil in the sense that a lot of people consider a lot of beauty products to be scams. Everything requires labor. Every single ounce of any essence requires so much land. It requires so much flowers. It's like distillation, all of the different processes that have to happen for one note in any ratio. It's a universe.
Yeah.
If one fragrance house decides to not use a particular rose, an entire farm may go out of business because they may be like, that fragrance house may be its only customer, and it completely relies on that single order to create a livelihood for an entire family. And as global warming happens and the field's time and the yields become shorter and earlier, the logistics of getting any materials to be reliable and to get delivered on time in the quantities that brands often expect, it becomes more and more difficult. And that is knowledge that's constantly changing as the world changes and heats up. And it is something that most people don't understand, which I totally get. They're not as nerdy as I am about these things. But it's something that I wish there was more education about, because we cannot expect that the things we want will always be accessible to us. It's not about us as consumers when it comes to pricing for a lot of these things. I don't believe the customer is always right. I would be a horrible salesman. I'd be like, actually, you're wrong, bye. But the reality is, I don't think dupe culture and the internet have been good for beauty, even if I'm really excited that fragrance is more accessible now. I really love that people can be introduced to different fragrances at Target now. They have their own dupes or whatever. That's cool.
Yeah.
But if they expect independent fragrance houses to operate at a loss because they want all of their fragrances to be $50, I think that's ridiculous and entitled and weird. I operate on the side of artists most of the time. I want people to be paid for the labor, and I want the laborers to be appropriately rewarded for the work that they do to make art possible.
Right.
And that matters a lot to me. And I think that people have been historically more willing to pay more money for fragrances in the past, and they're not now. And that's fair because we're all struggling. I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, wouldn't it be cool if we got to make a living from the things that we actually love doing? Just as a concept, I think that would be pretty nice. And I want to live in a world in which people understand how much labor goes into creating something beautiful and it's rewarded for it. And it's not about a split second decision by a customer to be like, oh, I don't know why this is so expensive. It's going to just disappear after a while anyway. I'm like, okay. But it took so much time and effort to get to you.
Yeah. The word luxury gets thrown around. It's basically just a marketing jargon term now, but people really want luxury at a quote unquote affordable price, whatever people consider affordable. But fragrance is one of those things that if you want it to be affordable, the quality takes a hit and everything about it takes a hit. Sure, you might be getting a piece of the experience, but at the expense of everything that goes into making it.
Yeah. And the more, like, you learn that so quickly when you're really learning about fragrance.
Yeah.
Because you can get this smelled like bottled, like the facsimiles of the real perfumes. You can get those. You get like the one hit appreciation of it. But then when you smell an original, you're like, oh, this has more depth. Even if you just concentrate on a single note, like I can smell an immediate difference between a cheap synthetic sandalwood and like a fancy, schmancy, expensive sandalwood. And I may not be a professional perfumer, but that's just because I've noticed the difference in quality during blind tests. I wouldn't need you to tell me that something's more expensive because I can feel it in my body. It's not as metallic-y. It's not as itchy. Sometimes the quote unquote like cheap stuff, it leaves really quickly and it gives you like an itchy impression. Something feels off. And then when you smell a really high quality, let's say rose, like a Turkish rose or something, as opposed to a synthetic version of it, you can almost smell the soil. Sometimes you can smell the difference in region. Even if you haven't done a really thorough fragrance education, if you just pay attention to the natural versions of things, you learn. And that's how anyone builds out their fragrance education. It's just splitting it up and paying attention really thoroughly. And you do this all the time anyway. You just have to be more intentional about it.
Yeah. I think of it cover bands.
Like that is really good.
You could have a great cover band, but it's not going to be like, it's not going to be Blondie, or it's not going to be, who gets covered? I don't know, the B-52s or something. So yes. It's like the same, an enjoyable experience, but not the experience.
Yeah.
This obviously doesn't apply to Miley Cyrus or Kelly Clarkson covers because they always completely colonize the song. This is my song now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're like, it is yours now. You're right.
Yeah. We're not talking about like the Whitney Houstons and the Dolly Partons thing.
No. Yeah. But yeah, even popular fragrances are often remixes. They're all twist. Like many of them are twists. Fragrance culture refers to itself all the time, because that's what the industry tells it to do when you're operating at a high level as a fragrance knows. They're like, do this, but better with it. That's what happens. Everything's derivative. I won't say that completely. Everyone is referencing each other.
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah.
It's like the Spider-Man meme of the five or six Spider-Man just all pointing at each other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel like we could just go on for days, Sable.
But before we go, I did actually want to invite both of you and pretty much anyone that's listening to this new project thing that I'm doing, which is all about fragrance community, because we've been talking about it. I'm going to be starting this writing experiment next month. It's going to start like May 1st. And it's going to be called Perfumes Pages. So it involves me sending anyone that's in the program a customized fragrance bundle from my archives, a book about beauty that I really loved and used over the years. And then we spend a month together co-working about beauty online.
And I love that.
Collectively, we can all put our work together into a zine that people can buy at sliding scale, and the money will be pulled back into the people that have paid for the program. We're going to do a group split. I wanted to do something that was more community oriented, that was like sharing the collective knowledge that I've built throughout the years. Dude, so you're both invited. There.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This sounds amazing. I love this.
Okay, great. Yeah, because you were so both cool. Like on my list of people to ask, but I know that anyone that's listening to this would probably be down as well just to hang out.
I think a lot of listeners would definitely be into this idea. It's like a book club, but better because it's a perfume book club.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to invite you. I hope you guys can hang out. And thank you for having me so much on your podcast. Like,
thank you. So glad
I loved hanging out with you guys.
Wow. A perfume book club. I'm so mad I didn't think about that.
I know. Sorry, I was trying to negotiate a thought there. Clearly it did not work. No, that sounds insane. And I can't wait to see what comes of that. I can't wait to be a part of it.
Yeah. I've never joined a book club because the idea, because like I'm not a quote unquote good reader, and that I get distracted easily. And it'll take me a long time to read a book because I'll put it down and then forget about it and then go about my life and then remember it 2 months later and be like, oh yeah, that book that I liked. Yeah. But I guess having a group to hold you accountable is just finish your homework.
Mm-hmm. And it's another way to make beauty a communal experience. Yeah. I love that. I think it's easy to get that.
Forget that. Perhaps. And also, like, it's beauty as a communal experience that isn't like a Botox party.
Right.
Because we do have, there are those that people have.
And they're valid.
And they're valid. I am not within that tax bracket, so I am not invited to those parties, but...
If you want to invite me, my DMs are open.
Yeah. I feel like I'm always thinking about ways to write about beauty in the way that they do, mm-hmm. or just in a way that's more personally enriching and mm-hmm. heartening. And that's not just like how to be hotter. I don't know.
I was struck, and even in the way that admittedly we have a working knowledge of sourcing and sustainability or the lack thereof when it comes to fragrance and what any and all of that means. I'm certainly not an expert, but I was struck just by the way that they were talking about rose farmers or materials, things like that. And damn, we think about perfume and we see the bottle. And we know it comes from somewhere. Product. Yeah, but it's like when I think about, oh, where did this come from? I usually think about Givaudan or like Sephora, not a family, not laborers. Really fascinating and does help put a new and different perspective on it. Something that I think that I could... do well to think a little bit more about.
Not until I took it upon myself to actually make a fragrance that I'm like, this shit is hard. Yeah. And I'm not even starting a brand. I'm not doing the whole storytelling route of it in that regard, but there are no good caps in America. Fragrance does not deserve to be duped. I'll say that much. I have a newfound respect for how this shit gets made because, oh my God. But I'm also like, if I was one of those influencers who gets tapped by an incubator to make their own brand, obviously that is work as well. As I like hold a Naturium lip balm in my hand, I'm just like, you have a team. I have Alibaba.
Right. Buy House of Beauty when it comes out.
Yes.
Buy Die Hot with a Vengeance when it comes out, July 9th.
July 9th. I am so excited to actually launch this fragrance and talk about it and actually have people smell it. I'm going to be so stoked. Find us at our website, smellulator.live, where you can leave us a voice memo at our hotline. You can find our merch apparel there. You can follow us on Instagram. We're at smellulator.mp3. I am at Sabletooth Tigra.
We learned how to use Canva. Yeah. More on that. Yeah. I'm at Tynan Buck. And until next time, we will smell you later. That one is good.
Yeah.